Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Erechin Daf Yud Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 13 lines from the top of Daf Yud Gimel. The first word on the line is Gufa. Gufa, in effect, is a quote from that which was studied earlier. We have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text indicating to look at Yud Beis Omid Beis, and you will see over there where this quote comes from. So you'll notice that we have this in a frame. This is from a Tanaic source. Let us now read the Gemara. Gufa. G'shiva asur yavlos monu Yisrael mishenichnesu la'aretz v'ad shiyotsu. The Jewish people counted 17 Yovel cycles. A Yovel cycle is a cycle of 50 years. So they counted a cycle, 17 cycles of 50 years, a total of 850 years, from the time they entered the land till the time they went into exile under the Babylonian conquest. You can't say that the accounting of time started from their entrance. Shim ato omer, if you say mishenichnesumonu, that they counted from the time they actually entered the land, physically entered the land, nimtzo bayis chorev betchilas yovel, it would then come out that the temple destruction took place at the beginning of a yovel. And that is simply inaccurate because of what it says in the Pasuk. In Pasuk in Yecheskel, Perek Mem, it says, V'yata motse, you won't be able to fulfill that which it says, Ba'arba Yisrei Shona Achar Shehukso Ir, 14 years after the temple was destroyed, then there was a Yovel. That would have been a Yovel celebration or Yovel year. So what we have to do is, as it says there, subtract 7. Don't start your counting from the immediate entrance, but rather to account for 7 years of conquest and 7 years of division. As it says, Elot Seimehem Zayin Shekovshu V'Zayin Shechilku, 7 years of conquest and 7 years during which they were engaged in the division of the land. And so only after that was accomplished, then the number 850 starts. The topic heading and structural note that we have supplied on the side of the Gemara, on the outside margin, you can see there's an Osei / Mivneh, which is a topic heading and structural note where we've combined the two into one note. We have in our Gemara itself featured a double underline. This highlights the expression Sheva Shekiv Shemenolan and later on Sheva Shechil Kemenolan. HaCheshbon Shemelameid, we're going to see the calculation that teaches the kibush v'chilukaras hoyu b'meshech yudalid shonim, that the conquest and division of land took 14 years. That's 7 l'kibush v'zayin l'chiluk, and 7 for the division. You see, we've underlined sheva shekiv shemenolan. We're going to calculate that it took 7 years to conquer the land under the leadership of Yoshua. And later on, as we mentioned earlier, we have double underlined Sheva Shechilku. From where do we know that it took an additional 7 years to divide the land? So the Gemara says, after asking Sheva Shekiv Shemenolan, from where do we know that it took 7 years to conquer the land? Notice to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, we have an encircled tuf. That's a teretz. And a vertical dashed line indicating that all of the lines of the Gemara opposite this vertical dashed line are part of the answer. So it says in the Psukim, Dekoma Kolev, it says, he says, Ben Arboim Shana Nochi, B'shalach Moshe Eved Hashem Oisi Mikodesh Barnea L'Ragilos Oretz. He says, I was 40 years old when Moshe Rabbeinu sent me with another 11 spies to spy the land. V'ato hinei onochi hayom ben chomesh u'shmoinim shana. And now I am 85. V'omar mar. Shana rishona osa Moshe Mishkan. The first year in the Midbar, in the desert, they built the Mishkan. Shnia hukam ha-Mishkan. The second year they were in the desert, they set up the Mishkan. V'shalach meraglim. And the spies were sent to check out the land of Israel. Ki avur yardein, kolev ben kamahave. When they crossed the Jordan into the land of Israel, after the 40 years sojourn in the Midbar, how old was Kolev? Bar Tamnin Nechi Tartin. He was 80 minus 2, which is 78 years of age. Kikom Maflig Nachlois Koomar. When they divided the lands, he said, Ben Chomesh Ushmoinim Shana Anochi. The pasuk we saw above when he said, today I am 85, was at the point in time that they started dividing the land. Ishtakach the Sheva Kivshu. That from the time they entered the land till they started dividing the land from 78 to 85, that's 7 years. So that's what we said, Ishtakach the Sheva Kivshu. So the result of this calculation is that we see 7 years it took them to divide, to conquer the land. The Sheva Shechilkum, and all, from where do we know that it took 7 years to divide the land? Amongst the different Shvotim, the tribes, Iboy Seimo Midasheva Kivshu Sheva Chilku. One approach simply says that it's just like it took seven to conquer, it likewise took seven to divide the land. Iboy Seimo. Another approach suggests Midolo Mishtakach Lehu Arbo Esrei Shana Achar Asher Huksoir. If we don't say that it took seven additional years to divide the land, and which enables us to account for 14 years, whereby we say that only after this 14-year period do we start the whole counting scheme that we mentioned earlier. Like, if you don't say all of this, then you won't come out with the that which the pasuk says in Yechezkel chapter 40, that 14 years after the Churban, there came out a Yovel. So in order to have all of our calculations fit into place, we have to say that the Yovel counting started not immediately upon entering the land, because if you say that, as we said earlier, then it will come out that the destruction of the temple took place in a in a Yovel year, and the pasuk says that only 14 years after the destruction of the temple, what there fell out a Yovel year. So how do we account for that? So we have to say that the counting of the Yovlos started not immediately, but rather 14 years after the entrance into the land. The Mishnah. Ein pochasin mishisha tloim hamavukorin belishkas hatloim. There shall be no less than six tloim, six sheep that are designated for the tomid shel shachar and tomid shel barabayim korbanos. There shall be no less than six mavukorin, means checked out to be blemish free, that are located belishkas hatloim, in the special chamber or office for the storage or for the safekeeping of these animals, animals that were checked and found to be mum free, free of blemish. And the number six animals is kedei l'shabbos u'lishnei yomim tovim shel Rosh Hashanah. We just, at this point, we'll translate this phrase, but the Gemara will dwell on what exactly the Mishnah means. The Mishnah is telling us that these six animals will be enough for Shabbos and 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Umosifin ad la'olam. And you can have more, as many more as you like. But there must be no less than six of these checked animals, checked for blemish, namely mum-free, blemish-free animals, at any given time. There must be no less than six at any given time. Ein pochasin mishtei chatzosros. There shall be no less, by way of instruments, no less than two chatzotzros. Chatzotzros might be translated as trumpets, mitisha kinoros, or no less than nine kinor instruments, umosifin ad l'oilam, and you can have more, as many more as you like, vatzaltzal levad, and one tzaltzal. Tzaltzal is an instrument that might be, in fact, a cymbals, but we'll leave it as a tzaltzal for our shiur. As we go on in the Gemara, we glance at the side and we have a topic heading, Shisha Tloyim Hamuvukorim Belishkas HaTloyim. We'll talk about this insistence on having six checked animals in the office or the chamber designed for storing sheep for the purpose of korbonas. So our Gemara opens up with that we add in the heading, L'Shabbos U'L'Shneyim Imtovim Shel Rosh Hashanah. The six animals, the Mishnah said, are for Shabbos and 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara asks, Tamidim u'musafim tuvahavu. There would be many more animals than six if you need to account for the tamid, that's the daily morning and afternoon ola offering, public ola offering, and musafim are added korbanos that are characteristic of holidays and Shabbos as well. So if you are talking about animals needed for Shabbos and the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, you will need many more than just six animals. Why does the Mishnah speak about six animals? The Gemara answers, Tano be'alma koi. The Tano is not referring to that which is needed specifically for Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah. The atmidim l'chudei koi, and the Tana is referring to the number of tumid animals alone. Umai k'dei Shabbos u'shnei yomim tovim, and what is intended by the reference to Shabbos and the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, simono ve'alma. It's just a means of remembering the number six, so that instead of just saying merely six, and attached to that, we say that number of tamidim that you would need for Shabbos and 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. In fact, Shabbos has two tamidim, like any other day of the year. And Rosh Hashanah, the 2 days, each day having its own tamid requirements, two apiece, for a total of six animals. But we're not referring specifically to the needs of Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah, but rather we're using that simply as a means of remembering that you have to have at all times six animals in the chamber of sheep. Rashi, be'alma koi, de'b'chol yomos Hashanah nami bo'inon shisha. All days of the year, at any given time, there must be six animals in the Lishkas HaTloyim. V'lav mishum Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, and not because of anything specific to or related to Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah especially. Elo mishum de ben bag bag l'chforsh b'samach. This will become even clearer as we go along in the Gemara. V'hochi ko'omar, and thusly we are to understand the Mishnah. And we have included the next few, the couple lines in a frame, because this is the way the Gemara wants us to understand the Tanaic source. Whenever the Gemara does this reinterpretation or offers an understanding of a Tanaic source, we treat it in Gemara markings as if it were a source literally. So thusly we are to understand the Mishnah, Ein pochasin mishisha tloyim hamuvukorim belishkas hatloyim. There shall be no less than six animals that are checked, muvukorim, so checked to make sure they're blemish free in the lishkas hatloyim, arba yomim koidem shchita. They are there, an animal is checked in anticipation of its eventual slaughter 4 days later. So that there is always a a supply, if you will, of animals, that any given animal will be used 4 days from that point. The There is a Rashi that elaborates on this point a bit, and we'll look at the Rashi. There's a triangle that you'll notice in our marked Rashi, a triangle with a number 2. At that point, Rashi says, "Ulekach nira b'enai d'shmoina nitnu sham b'yom chinuch," that when the Mishkan was set up originally, 8 animals were put into the Lishkas HaTloim. V'shisha d'katoni b'masnisen, the 6 that the Mishnah mentions, hochi mashma, implies thusly, "Ein pochasin mishisha, there shall be no less than 6. Klomar shafilu kishayitlu hashnayim shebechol yoim," that on any given day when you take away the 2 that you need for that day, "nishtayim sham shisha mifukarim," there will always be six left. "Ulachar kach kodem alaylo," and before nightfall, "yivakru shnayim," they'll check out another 2 new animals, "v'yitnu sham," and they'll be placed in this particular lishka. "V'hanoch hoyo v'lesnu akati b'shas netilas hashnayim lo kachashiv lehu," they are not accounted for because they're not there yet when we took away the 2 that I need for that given day. They are replaced, however, later that day. So that at any given time, there are at least 6 animals that are checked for mum. And the animals that you take for a given day, you know, were checked 4 days earlier to be mum free. It would then seem from this description that at the beginning of the Korban cycle, when they set up the Mishkan, so already 4 days before they anticipated offering the sacrifices in the Mishkan, two animals were checked, they were put aside, and the next day 2 more animals, and down the line until the day that they started offering sacrifices. At that point, they would take the 2 animals that had been checked 4 days earlier, and when they remove those 2 animals for that first day of sacrificial activity in the Mishkan, there would be 6 animals left. The Gemara continues on the second line from the top of Omid Beis, "Umoni ben Bagbaki." This whole calculation or requirement of having animals checked out 4 days before they are actually used is in accordance with Ben Bagbag. Disanya Ben Bagbag Omer, this is a name of a Tana, Ben Bagbag. He says, "Minayim l'tomid shetoim bikur arba yomim kodim shechita," from where do we know that the daily tomid sacrifice need to be checked to be mum free 4 days before it was actually slaughtered? Talmud Lomar, we learn it from a word comparison between 2 psukim. The first pasuk quoted, "Tishmeru l'akriv li b'moado," a pasuk in the context of the Tomid daily offering. "Ulahalon omer," in the context of the Korban Pesach, it says, "V'hoyo lochem l'mishmeres ad arbo asor yom l'chodesh hazeh," that the animal used for the Korban Pesach was set aside on the 10th of Nisan in anticipation of its being slaughtered on the 14th of Nisan, so that it was set aside 4 days before it was actually slaughtered. "Ma lahalon ton bikur arba yomim," just like by the Korban Pesach, you need to have it checked out 4 days kodem shechita, before its slaughter. Afkan, so to hear by the Tomid, because of, you see the similar expression, the Mishmeres, and you had Tishmeru, the word Tishmu by the Tomid, which we also dashed underline. So to hear by the Tomid, ton bikur arba yomim kodem shechita. It has to be checked to be free of blemishes 4 days before it is used, before it's slaughtered for the Tomid purpose. Daiko nami, through careful reading of our Mishnah, you can reveal that the reference to Rosh Hashanah, Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah, was only for a simen, was only a means of remembering the number, but not a reference to the actual days of Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah. Tikotoni, the Lashon was, and you'll notice we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Omid Aleph. That means if you glance down the page to find another corresponding arrow indicating Omid Beis, you will see where this quote is coming from. It said in the Mishnah, "Kedei l'Shabbos l'Shnei Yomim Toivim shel Rosh Hashanah." The Loshon Kedei indicates That's what the Gemara says here. The katani kedei l'shabbos v'lo katani l'shabbos. It says kedei l'shabbos, and it doesn't say l'shabbos. If it had said l'shabbos, it means these are the animals needed specifically for Shabbos. But it doesn't say that. It says kedei l'shabbos, the number that would be needed for a Shabbos, not specifically for any given Shabbos. Shma mino. So from this extra expression of kedei l'shabbos, we understand that it's that the reference to Shabbos is just here as a means of remembering that you need to have no less than six animals in the chamber of sheep to account for what would be needed for Shabbos and 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. But once again, we're not referring to the specific sacrifices needed for those days, but it's this: we need for any day during the year enough animals that if it would come out Shabbos and 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, I would have all of the necessary animals already there in the Lishka. And for Shabbos and 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, of course, you're talking about 3 days and two to meet him each day for a total of six. We had learned Mishtei Chatzotzros, there shall be no less than two trumpets, Umosifin, Vuhule, and it said Ad Olam, the Ad Kama. Well, how much can be added? When you say you can keep adding, well, how much do you mean? Omar Rav Huna, the Amri Law, another version by way of names is Omar Rav Zvid, Omar Rav Huna. Instead of Rav Huna directly speaking, it's Rav Zvid quoting Rav Huna. Ad Me'al V'esrim, you can have up till 120. Shinemar v'moyem koyanim l'meo v'esrim mechatzrim b'chatzotzros. So that the pasuk indicates you can have up till 120 trumpet players. Mitisho kinoros v'tzaltzel levad mino hanimili. From where do we know that there is a requirement of a singular tzaltzel? Omar Rav Asi, Yomar Kro, v'asof b'metzaltayim mashmiya. Asof is a name of a Levi, and the Pasuk mentions is the Levi with his Mitzaltayim. The Gemara asks Mitzaltayim Trei Havu. The word Mitzaltayim indicates two. The Gemara answers the instrument in question is like we suggested before that it might be a reference to something like a cymbals that's made of two metal plates that are clanged together. Kevan dechado avidito avdi, since they perform one function, the two parts, the two plates or the two pieces of metal fulfill one, they create one sound by them being clanged one upon the other. V'chad gavro ovid buhu, and one person is playing it, uses it, or makes the sound with it. Kori luhu chad, it's therefore referred to by the Mishnah as one tzaltzal. Ein pochasin mishnei mosor levim oimdim ala duchan. There shall be no less than 12 Levium standing on the platform that was designated for the Levium to sing, Umosifin ad la'olam, and you can add and keep adding. Ein hakoto nichnas lazor lavoda elo bishal shelavim omrim bishir. A minor, a Levi who is a minor, does not enter the temple courtyard for service other than at the time that the adult Levium are singing or saying the shir. The velo hoyu omrim benevel ubekinor elbepeh. The minors would not be instrumentalists, but rather vocalists. K'deliten tevel v'ne'imo. Their high-pitched voice would add a sweet sound to the song. Rabbi Elazar ben Yankov omer, ein oylin leminyan. The k'tanim don't help to complete the minimum number that we mentioned, that there should be no less than 12 levium standing on the platform. For song, the minors do not contribute toward that number. The ein oylin leduchan elo ba'aretz hayu omdim. They would not ascend the platform that was set up in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, but rather the minors, the children, would stand on the ground. V'roshen ben ragli halavim, and there, because of the height of the adults standing on the platform, it would end up that the heads of the children would be at the same height as between the legs of the adults. V'tsa'arei halavim hoyu nikroyim. The word tsa'ir is to cause pain. they were referred to by this term. The Gemara will make an allusion to this later on. Hani Keneged Mi. We said there are 12 Levium that are standing on the... There should be no less than 12 vocalists on the platform. So the number 12, what is that in conjunction with, or in honor of what is the number 12 established? Amara Papa Keneged Tisha Kinoros Ushne Nevola Vatsaltzel Echad. It corresponds to the minimum number of instruments, the nine required kinoros, two nevolim, and one tzaltzal. Shnemar, hu ve'echov uvonov shneim osar. The pasuk makes reference to 12 levim. Ein hakotel nichnas lazora lavore el b'shal shel levim v'chulei. Mino hani mili. From where do we know that the ketanim don't enter the azora other than during the time of song, in order to add to the sweetness of the melody? From where do we know this? Omar Rav Yochanan, the Omar Kra. The pasuk says, "Vayamod Yeshua Bonov Ve'achov Kadmiel Yeshua Bonov Ve'achov Kadmiel Uvonov Bnei Yehuda." As far as how this pasuk demonstrates the point, this is something that Tosfos elaborates on. And he says that there's an extra expression in this pasuk, b'nehem, from which I learned the idea of the miners being there just for the song. Lo hoyu omrim, lo b'nevel, v'lo b'kino, elo b'peh. The miners would not be instrumentalists, not playing the nevel nor the kinor. From the fact that this pasuk, that this line of the Mishnah splits between nevel and kinor, presents them as two separate instruments, this gives rise to a question the Gemara asks. This is a long question. You can see we have a long question marking the shin that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. The Gemara asks, "Lameimra, is the Mishnah suggesting the nevel lechud, the kinor lechud, that the nevel is one type of instrument and the kinor is another type of instrument?" Well, if you go along with that, then lemo masnisin de lo Reb Yehuda. Then we'll have to say that our Mishnah, or should we say that our Mishnah is not like Reb Yehuda? Apparently, we will see in this upcoming Tanaic source that is authored by Reb Yehuda, that a nevel and kinor are actually one in the same. Our Mishnah, which seems to split them up, present them separately, they're not one in the same. Hence, the Gemara is asking that should we say that our Mishnah is not in conformity to the opinion of Reb Yehuda? Desanya, here we have a Tanaic source in which Reb Yehuda is featured. Reb Yehuda Omer, kinor shel mikdash shel shivas nimen hoya. The kinor of the Beis HaMikdash was a seven-stranded instrument. Shenemar, Sova smochos es penecha. Al tikri Sova elo Sheva. The word Sova also looks like the word Sheva. Hence, we understand that there's a reference to seven strands. Veshel Yimosa Moshiach, Shmoina. The kinor that will be present in the times of Moshiach will have eight. Shenemar, Lamnatseach al Hashminis. And the word Shminis is understood as Al Nimo Shminis, a reference to the eighth strand. Veshel Olam Haba, the kinor of the future, Eser, Shenemar, Ale Osor, Vale Nevel, Ale Higoyon, Vechinor. In this pasuk, you see the reference to Asor, 10 strands. The Omer, Hodu Lashem, Vechinor, Benevel, Asor, Zamulo, Shiru, Lo, Shir Chadash. You can see how Rabbi Yehuda opens up this source by describing the kinor of different time periods, and in explaining the Olam Haba time period, he quotes a pasuk in which it says, "Hodu Lashem b'kinor b'nevel osar." So the word nevel is used to represent the kinor of Olam Haba. So we see from here that the kinor and nevel are one in the same. The Gemara answers, Afilu Temo Rabbi Yehuda. Our Mishnah, which seems to treat them as separate instruments, is in conformity with Rabbi Yehuda as well. as far as what he says in this source, le'olam haba, regarding the world to come, or the future time known as olam haba, aidi dinafishi nimen didei, the kinor of olam haba will have many strands, nofish kolei kinevel, it will have a lot of sound or tune or sound potential, like a navel. A navel is an instrument that produces many different sounds. So kori le navel, the kinor of olam haba, therefore is referred to as a navel. In once again, in truth, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, they are two separate instruments, and that in general, a kinor in and of itself produces less tunes or less tones than a navel. However, the kinor of olam haba, being that it will have extra strands, it will be capable of producing many sounds, many notes, many tunes, as if it were a navel. As we said, a navel is an instrument that's capable of producing right now many different notes. Rabbi Lozer ben Yankov Omer Ein Oilun Min Haminyan V'Chulei Tona V'Soare Halavim Hoyu Nikraim. The so'ade, let's correct ourselves, the so'ade, halavim ha'nikroim, the youth, the minors that entered the Azorah for song purposes were called so'ade, halavim. So'ade means helpers. They helped out in the song. They helped the adults in their song. The Tana Didon, our Tana, Kevon Dehani Kotin Kalayu, The minors had very thin or high-pitched, shrill voices. The hani of kalayo, the adults had thicker, mature voices. Hani mekatati, vani lo mekatati. The minors, mekatati means they were able to produce a very high-pitched, thin vocal sound. And the gedolim, the adult ones, lo mekatati, were incapable of that. So, because the youth, the minors, were able to reach high notes, kori luhu tsa'are, they were referred to by that term. The idea of tsa'are has to do with causing pain, or if we could say frustration. The youth would frustrate the adults in the fact the adults lack the ability to reach that very high note that the minors were able to reach. Hence, they're called by that term tsa'are. As Rashi says at the bottom of the commentary on this perek, he says, where we have a little star position, umitzarin halavim, these youth, these minors would cause a sense of pain to the adults, she'ein yicholim levasim kolam kamosim, that couldn't have such a sweet, high-pitched melodic voice like the children. Hence, the children were referred to as tsare, the causers of pain. We now start the next perek, the third perek of Maseches Erechin, the Mishnah. Yesh be'erechin lahokel ulahachmir. Within the realm of Erechin, Erechin is the Torah-based amount that is paid upon an individual making an erech dedication. That's an amount paid based on gender and age. That's fixed by the Torah. There's a Torah rate, and within this context of one who vows to pay Torah rates, there are times where it comes out to be there is a leniency associated with it, and at times a stringency associated with it. And we can say already now, this is in contrast with the case of someone dedicating their market value. That's called domim. Domim is a market value. Erechin is a reference to a predetermined Torah value. This will be explained, though, later on. Ubestei achuza lahokel ulahachmir. There is within the realm of a inheritance field, elements of stringency and elements of leniency and elements of stringency. Ubeshor hamuad shehemis hoeved lahokel lahachmir, regarding a case of a cow, an ox that's that's known to be dangerous, a goring ox, a shor hamuad, that killed an eved, that killed a slave. There is an element of lahakel, leniency, and lahachmir, stringency. And within the realm of rape, seduction, or casting an ill reputation concerning matters of one's wife and issues concerning intimacy, there are elements of lahakel ulahachmir. All of these things will be explained as we go on. Lahakel ulahachmir, we say that is associated with the last phrase of Moines Mafate, there is lahakel ulahachmir. Now, we go over these points, and hence you can see with our markings, we had listed four letters indicating four categories, and now Aleph here that appears is a reference back to the encircled Aleph before. Yesh be'erichin lahokil lahachmir ketzad. What do you mean by that? That with regard to one who vows a Torah rate, there is an element of leniency and an element of stringency. Well, how does that figure? Echot sheherich es hanoa sheb'Yisrael, es hakiur sheb'Yisrael. If one donates or vows to give the erech of a beautiful Jew or an ugly Jew, nosein chamishim sela. If you're talking about a 20-year-old male between 20 and 60 years of age, whether he be something beautiful, something attractive, or something someone ugly, the same amount is paid. That's nosein chamishim sela. So that if you're dealing with someone of extraordinary good looks, the chamishim sela is a fraction of what his market value would be. On the other hand, someone who is ugly, the chamishim sela would represent a stringency relative to market value. It would be a lot of money, a lot more than one would pay for him on the open market. The imomar hare domov olai. If, however, someone vowed to give the market value of these individuals, no sein es shavyo, he would give what the going rate is for someone of that nature. So that what we just described is, as far as in the realm of erechin, you find cases where it turns out to be more lenient than what would have been the cost or the amount that one would have to pay had they vowed the domim. And there are times that in erechin it's a chumrah that you'll have to pay much more to fulfill your erechin vow than had you made a domim type vow. The Gemara, yesh berechin lahokel lachmir ketzad echad sheherich es hanoe sheb'Yisrael. The example that the Mishnah cited to illustrate the issue of erechin was someone who donated the value of a noe sheb'Yisrael. Now, the Gemara attempts to infer b'Yisrael in ba'oved kochavim lo, that the subject of the erech, which we call ne'erach, he is the subject of the erechin. It says a Jew is the subject, and seems to indicate that not an idol worshipper. It's mashma then, and we wrote this between the lines, mashma she'akum eino nerach, that an idol worshipper doesn't serve as the subject of an erech vow. Now, before we go further in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, which introduces this section of Gemara, and we have written, mehotikotoni hanoa sheb'Yisrael, bedugmas erechin lahachmir, should we conclude from the fact that this example was given that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Meir, the Omar Gam Akum Nerach? According to Rabbi Meir, not only is a Jew one who can serve as a subject of Erechin, but an idol worshipper likewise can be the subject of someone's Erechin vow. So our Gemara, second line from the bottom, says, Lemo Masnisin Velok Rabbi Meir. From the fact that the Mishnah used as an example someone who is donating the Erech of Yisrael, it sounds like our Mishnah is not in accordance with Rabbi Meir, Disnan. We have a Tanaic source in which Rabbi Meir's opinion is featured. It says, Oyvei Kechovim, Rabbi Meir Omer Ne'erach, Avolo Marich. Rabbi Meir says, regarding an idol worshipper, that he can be Ne'erach. He can be the subject of an Erech vow. However, he cannot initiate, an idol worshiper cannot initiate a vow of an erechin nature. So at this point then we have a question, that should we say that our Mishnah, which uses as its illustration a Jew being the subject of someone's erech vow and not an idol worshiper, it seems to be unlike Rebbe Meir. The Gemara answers, Afilu Tamar Rebbe Meir. Our Mishnah can be in accordance with Rebbe Meir as well. Hu Hadin Afilu Ove Tuchavim Nami. In fact, the Mishnah could have used an example of an idol worshiper as well as being the subject of an erech vow. Elo Milsa, at the top of Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, we have a little one. This is the first of a couple of approaches. Elo Milsa Agav Urche Komash Molon. The Mishnah, in citing the example of a Jew, was telling us something by the way. Now, what was the example we saw in the Mishnah? The example of Echot Sherich Es Hanoe Sheb Yisrael. Whether it be someone who vows the erech of a beautiful Jew, a good looking, attractive Jew. So we're taught by the example something by the way. Kidder of Yudah Marav, a teaching that was made famous by Rav Yudah, quoting Rav, the Yomar of Yudah Marav, Osur L'Odom, Sheyoimar Kama Noa Kenani Zeh. It is forbidden for someone to say, how attractive is this Canaanite? Canaanite being the example of an idol worshiper, it is forbidden based on a pasuk that says Lo Seichonein, and in which the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zorah darshins Lo Sitein Lohem Chein, don't bestow upon them any words of grace. So that our Mishnah was trying to communicate this idea by citing specifically the example of Yisrael, and it mentioned whether it be the erech of a beautiful Yisrael. So for that, because of Yudah Marav's halacha, it couldn't have taught an example involving a Canaanite or an idol worshipper, because that would have been in violation of Yudah Marav's halacha, whereby someone is praising the good looks of a Canaanite or idol worshipper. And as we said, that would be forbidden. So let's just go over this point again. As a basic erech, if someone sees an idol worshipper walking by and says, I want to give his erech to the Beis HaMikdash, that would take hold. We just have to find out assuming the gender is obvious, we just have to find out the individual's age, and even though he's an idol worshipper, your erech vow would take hold, because, as we said, an idol worshipper could be the subject of an erech vow. However, to speak about the erech of a beautiful, of a good-looking idol worshipper, that the Mishnah did not want to mention. Because of this halacha, that it's also it's forbidden for a person to say how beautiful, how attractive is this Canaanite or idol worshipper. The Gemara asks the Lisni, why didn't the Mishnah say, cite or speak thusly, Es hanoe sheb Yisrael, ves hakiur shebiknanim. The Mishnah in fact said that whether it be the erech of a good-looking Jew or an ugly Jew, but couldn't the Mishnah have taught whether it be the erech of a good-looking Jew or an ugly Canaanite? Being that it's forbidden to speak about the praise of Canaanites or idol worshippers, but when referring to Kior, someone that's ugly, couldn't the Mishnah have used that example? And yet the Mishnah didn't. It spoke about Kior Sheb Yisrael. So the Gemara answers, Bechad Umo Kamairi, Betray Umo Lo Mairi. The Mishnah is giving examples staying within one nation and not citing examples, citing two nations to illustrate its point. The Gemara asks, Velo, is that really so that the Mishnah hesitates or refrains from citing two nations? Mahokotani, it says, on Omid Beis, on Yudal Omid Beis, in the section of the Mishnah discussing the issue of rape and seduction, it says, whether it be Hagidola Shebekuna, there's Haktano Shebe Yisrael. So you see there's a reference to, on the one hand, Kahuna, and a reference to non-Kahuna, Yisrael, which gives us the impression that these Mishnayos do use two nations in their examples. So the Gemara answers, that's not an example of two nations. Kehanim and Yisraelim, Hosam Chad Umahu, Elo Mikdash Hudekvishi, Kehanim Tvei. They are all members of the Jewish people. It's just that Kohanim have a certain level of increased holiness that others do not have. But that wouldn't be a fair illustration of the Mishnah using an example involving two nations. The Ibois Emo, another approach to understanding the Mishnah, why the Mishnah emphasized Yisrael, when it said whether it be the erech of a noesh of Yisrael, why the Mishnah featured Yisrael, is Aidi de Kaboy le Mishnah Seifa, since the next Mishnah wants to talk about Sedei Achuza, the issue of inheritance fields and laws concerning inheritance fields, the Yisrael hu de Mishkachas law, ba'ovid kuchavim lo Mishkachas law. The issue of inheritance fields is something found only in the context of Jews and not in the context of idol worshippers. The lav b'nei achuzo ninhu, idol worshippers are not considered within the realm of those who received inheritance fields in the land of Israel. So mishum hochi katoni b'Yisrael. That's why when speaking about the erech of a noesh of Israel, the Mishnah featured Yisrael. Once again, not to make the point that an idol worshipper cannot be the subject of an erech. That might very well be that he could be the subject of an erech. However, when you continue in the Mishnah and you speak about the other topics, amongst which is the issue of stei achuza, that topic has no relevance to idol worshippers. Therefore, in the earlier example, in the earlier case of erechin, the Mishnah did not mention anything about idol worshippers. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.